This is He Said, Ella Dijo with Eric Winter and Rosalind Sanchez.
Hi.
Good morning. Good
welcome.
Afternoon.
Good afternoon. O'clock. It is, what time is it?
10 o'clock. Yeah, we're recording.
Welcome to a new episode of He Said, Ella Dijo. So many things to talk about today, Eric.
We have some great, some things we've been just mulling over for conversation purposes. But one of them, this is a new thing that I just came across, a person, a man who works in the business. And could you do this? Like, we're about to embark on another stretch of time where we're going to be apart because you're about to go do Fantasy Island again for a couple, maybe 3.5 months. But I think we won't see each other again for maybe 2 months, which wasn't as bad as the first time.
Okay.
So this person I just met directs, and they've been married for 21 years.
Mm-hmm.
They have 2 kids now, I think, or 3 kids. I don't know, but they're all older now.
Okay.
But since the kids were born, a year after being married, this person who directs lives in another country farther away and just has to travel to the U.S., only comes home for Christmas and sometimes a break maybe in the summer. So basically, married for 20 years, the kids know nothing different. There's the country's too far away, so there's no jumping back and forth for a quick weekend. You know, you're as a director, you're on set 24/7 in prep. You're always working. Mm-hmm. Doesn't see the kids for 5-6 months at a time for the past 20 years, or the wife. What do you think? You're very happy, and I get it, to go work on Fantasy Island again, which is great, and it's only 13 episodes, so it's not going to be that long.
Mm-hmm.
But are you fine bailing on me and the kids for every year for 5 or 6 months at a time?
For 5 or 6 months at a time?
Yeah, and that's if that's all the kids knew, you're going to be gone 5 or 6 months at a time.
No, I'm not comfortable. I'm not happy.
Because you want to direct, too.
By any means. Yeah, but that's more if you do direct an episodic TV. When you do TV, when you do episodic, you go from gig to gig to gig to gig. And then, yeah, that happens. And that's why I'm telling you that I'm not, God willing, I can continue directing. I'm not as inclined to just be an episodic TV.
But that doesn't solve
director.
The problem. If you go do a feature, you can be gone for 2 months.
Exactly. You're gone for 2 months. You did your feature and then you go back home and then you don't do that for the next 6 months.
Okay.
Or whatever.
So if you go do like you wanted to do earlier this year, you go do Fantasy Island for 4 months.
Yeah.
You come back home for maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Then you go again for 2 months.
I'm
going to
warn you right now, 2022, there's going to be a lot of traveling because there's a lot of projects, at least 3 or 4 that I need to get out of the way. And then 2023.
2021 was the same way. You were gone for 8 months out of the year. Yeah, you were.
Okay. It is, but it's not 20 years. So just bear with me. I'm 48 years old. Listen to me. Let me finish. I'm 48 years old. I'm so lucky and blessed that I've been doing this for so long and I'm still working. And very soon, because of my age and I'm a woman, and maybe I'm just talking out of my ass,
you
but
are.
I'm thinking that I'm going to take advantage of this burst of blessings that I'm getting because they make me happy. That doesn't mean that
so
I'm going to be
okay with it.
No, I'm not okay with 20 years. That's not my
but this
case.
This is the beginning of it. This is the first time
well,
in our
I have
whole
to go
marriage.
To Fantasy Island for 3.5 months. Then we're going to go to Mexico together to do a movie together for a month and a half.
And then you're going to take off again for 2 months?
And then I have to do one more thing for 2 months. Yeah. I'm trying to move that thing to Los Angeles. I told you that. I said, I'm going to.
That thing? That thing better be in Los Angeles. There's no way you're going to go for that project.
Well, don't say.
I'm not game for that.
Better
not the one that you.
Don't
not the one
no,
that you wrote. Not the
not
one that
choice.
You wrote. The one that you wrote. I get it. The one that someone's hiring you for. No way. That's not worth.
Anyways,
it. That's not worth.
So
it.
I feel like the question was all a trap.
No, I didn't even know.
So I have a problem.
I didn't even. This is actually brand new information. I didn't even know you were considering that project if it shot out of the.
That's what I said to you. That I'm
no,
trying to make it.
No, you said
go
they're approaching me again to do this, and I said if it's in LA, and I said yes, if it's in LA, totally makes sense. If it's not in LA, okay. That project does not.
Anyway,
make sense.
To answer your question, am I comfortable leaving for 20 years? And seeing my kid 2 months out of the year for 20 years? No, somebody else.
What about
is
your spouse?
Upbringing and the spouse.
Jesus. I'm talking about this person doesn't see their partner but twice a year and basically told me they just live their separate lives.
Okay,
so they're married when they're together, but when they're separate,
okay,
they're separate.
But that's,
meaning I'm assuming means an open relationship.
Well, but that's not our case and it's never going to be our case. So don't compare your life, journey
if this is
with
the,
that man,
if this is
it has
the
nothing
beginning.
To do with yours. Because even when I'm traveling, I am very present.
But
you know
this
that
is
I'm all about being a mom.
But what about
and
being
a wife?
Exactly.
You I keep just said
saying,
it.
No,
and a wife.
I had to remind you. You keep saying for the kids,
wow.
As a mom.
I just got hot. I'm uncomfortable.
I didn't even know this was going to happen because you didn't tell me about
this
project.
This is not a conversation that we have to have. He said, ella dijo, if you have an issue, we can talk it out
no.
privately, and then we bring it up.
You
and he
just said
ella dijo.
At this moment in my life where I'm in this age and all this stuff is starting
for
the first
time. I'm going to ride the wave,
100%. Yes. What if that wave goes for 20 years? Then
no,
clearly
no,
you're just, okay with it.
No, I'm not, because I'm going to make a choice not to ride the wave as a surfer.
Okay, but then make a choice to
I'm
ride.
I'm going to make a choice to just be picky and pick
be,
and
that
choose
would be my advice.
What I'm going to do.
Pick and choose the right wave.
Of course. And
because
I will.
That wave that you're talking about that I didn't even know about that we just brought up right now is not the right wave.
I don't have to tell you about it, Eric, because you know.
No.
You know that I'm very lucky that I'm on show.
That project was dead.
Yeah, forget about that project. I'm not talking
the
about
show
the
I'm fine with.
Yes. And then what are we talking about?
The project that you just brought up.
It doesn't matter. It's just one project. It's 2 months of your life.
Is the wrong wave.
Okay. It's fine. Whatever. Anyway, next topic.
Oh, this was
ridiculous.
This completely went sideways. I had
yeah,
no
it
intention.
Did. Because
but I
know.
Didn't know that that was going to be the what you were going to bring up. I really didn't.
It doesn't matter. You know, I think this is the deal, guys. This is what Eric wanted to hear.
No,
never,
I wanted to have a conversation.
I will never do that. As a matter of fact, I'm not even going to work anymore. I will never.
No, I don't want you not
That's
to work. You'd drive me crazy if you didn't work because you'd love
exactly.
to work.
Exactly. I'm glad you
but,
know that.
But you love to work and I support
just
your work.
Know
I always have supported your
wife.
Work.
Well, your wife's priority and her life is her kids and her husband.
Well, kids, you've said it clear every
I'm just
single
very
time. Your husband,
that
you haven't
I am
brought
able
up much.
To work the amount of work that I'm receiving.
And
thank you, Lord, because I have worked really, really
100%,
hard to get to this place.
But you got to pick good work that makes sense to leave town. If it's in town,
have
you can pick so work. If it's out of town,
I'm very proud of all the work that I've done.
But
there's a couple of things that are necessary.
Exactly.
But this is before I met you, so it doesn't
still,
really matter.
Even unnecessary work, if it's in town, if it's a payday, maybe you consider it. But if it's out of town, unnecessary work could be passed on.
Anyways, so let's talk about.
I didn't anticipate that. That was.
No, you brought it up. So
but
you
I
should,
didn't
you,
know
you
was
did
gonna,
anticipate it.
I did not know we were going to talk about
okay.
that.
Okay. Next.
I was talking about Fantasy Island. Wow.
Okay, we have two more topics that we want to discuss, but we're going to do something different. We have a great guest, so we are going to talk to our guests, and then at the very end, when we
maybe
close
we'll
our final thoughts,
topics.
We will bring up these two other hot topics because they are hot.
Are they?
But they're hot.
Hat?
Hot.
There you go.
Caliente. Caliente
si,
in a bad way, though.
Claro.
They're actually not good stories, but I think we should talk about it. Anyways, our guest, Aida Rodriguez. Guys, you know what? I was thinking about this, Eric. This little podcast that we do, he said, Ella Dijo, that is a labor of love that we so much enjoy, that is growing and growing, and we're getting more and more and more listeners. We have been so lucky because the caliber of talent that we get and the conversations that we get to have are pretty special. And we do have people telling us that, people within the business saying, your guests are awesome, guys.
It's
you guys
true.
Are getting really good people. Today is one of those cases. We have a woman, this beautiful lady, Dominican Puerto Rican. I feel like she's my sister. I feel like I'm related. And I'm Rodriguez as well. I'm Sanchez Rodriguez and she's Aida Rodriguez.
That's your Winter.
Yeah, that too. I'm Rosalind Sanchez Winter Rodriguez. Anyways, she has a new show for HBO, stand-up
HBO
comedy.
Max.
HBO Max. It's her first 1 hour stand-up special.
And correct me if I'm wrong. She's the first female Latina on HBO Max to have her own stand-up special?
I think right? so. Let's ask. Okay. I think so. I went to the premiere. She's incredible. So ridiculously smart and outspoken. She doesn't give a flying F about what anybody thinks. She has her point of view and she will open her mouth and say it. And you know what? She's not wrong.
Let's bring
That's
her in.
That's the beauty of it. Aquí está. Hola, mami.
¿Cómo tú estás, mi amor?
Bien, ¿y tú?
Hello,
¿cómo estás?
Hello.
Gracias. This is my husband, Eric. I don't think you've met Eric before.
No, I only met him on Fantasy Island while he was climbing that mountain.
Perfect.
How are you? Thank you for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Sorry I missed your show. I heard it was incredible. I know a lot of people that actually went.
I know.
I mean, besides my wife, but everybody just raved about it. And it was, yes. I'm so thrilled for you.
Thank you. I hope it's doing well. It came from a good place.
It did. Of course, it's going to do well. It is so awesome, Aida. Thank you. I told you afterwards, and I texted you about it. I am so incredibly impressed. You know, I laughed my ass off. I cried. I was with Lisa Vidal, a mutual friend. We're both looking at each other over and over again, going like, she's really something. She's really freaking something.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Aida, aren't you the first female to have her own special on HBO Max? Am I making that up or is that true?
Not the first female. I think I'm the first Latina.
Latina. Okay. Wow. First female Latina to have her own special.
Beth Stelling and Phoebe Robinson both have specials on HBO Max.
Got it.
So okay. I think I'm the first Latina.
Nice.
I think on the whole HBO platform.
That's incredible. And okay, Aida, I'm going to go a little bit to the past, you know, for people to get to know you a little better. So you're Dominican, Puerto Rican. You grew up thinking you're fully Puerto Rican. You learned you were Dominican as an adult.
More not an adult, but later on in life. Like I didn't grow up thinking I was half Dominican. I only knew my Puerto Rican side. But it was maybe like teen years, like
really?
Early teen, like right when I started, you know, having a sensibility about things that I didn't have as a child.
Explain that to me, because I don't know, you know, much about your backstory. What, why did you not know about the Dominican side of your heritage at all?
I think it was more. I mean, I joke about it in terms of the rivalries that you hear about the different Latin American countries, because I was trying to make a point about it. But specifically when it comes to my situation, I just think that my mom was very hurt about my father. She took me from him. She actually, you know, took me from him and I never saw him again. She kidnapped me from him. And
wow.
One of those like parental kidnap situations. And I didn't see him again until June. So I think that it was just more about not wanting to tell me about that entire side of that story. So they just told me, you just belong to us. You're Puerto Rican and that's it.
When you say you didn't see him until June, June of when?
2021.
Wow.
Yeah. It's in the back. Wow. It's on the documentary of the special. It's at the back end. And I actually shared that with, I did something that was very scary because, you know, I don't like trauma porn when it comes to Latinos, Latinx people, people of color. But I was just like, I know there are a lot of people who have experienced this and it's not just Puerto Ricans and Dominicans. I mean, I've had quite a few white people send me mm-hmm. messages and saying, I didn't know who my father was. Mm-hmm. Some people were even saying like, I didn't know I was part Irish. Like I grew up with my Polish family and they never told me I was Irish, like that deep into it. And so I just wanted to release some people from shame. Like I wanted people to see that I, who was a stand-up comedian that you've seen on Netflix, that's my story and that it's okay.
Yeah, that's great. Wow.
So I know the documentary, and for people to know, the special is 1 hour. And then after the special, there's a documentary where she travels to Puerto Rico and she travels to DR. Just to show culture and to share with the world, you know, her journey, meeting her father after so many years, meeting a lot of siblings, because you had like, how many were they? Like sisters and...
So there were three sisters that were in the Dominican Republic. There's one in the United States. There's a brother in the United States. So, but there were six nephews and nieces that I didn't know about. There is actually, I believe, 8 of them total, because I have a sister here that has 2 children and that I've never met. So it was just a lot. It was a shock because it was just, all these people knew who I was, but I never knew about them until I connected with my dad. So I didn't meet them when I shot the documentary. That was a joke, but I had not known about them my whole life. I only knew.
He lives in Puerto Rico.
No, DR. He lives in DR.
He went to the DR.
In the Dominican Republic.
Okay. Yeah, he got
deported. So he was undocumented and he lived in, and you know, that's one of the things about one of the rivalries between Puerto Rico and the Dominican Republic is Puerto Ricans are very proud of their American citizenship. And it is something that they don't ever, you know, they never hesitate to throw in someone's face in Latin America. It's like one of the points for Puerto Rico. Well, my father was undocumented. So I was an anchor baby, according to what these, you know, the people who are anti-immigration. And so it was, I never knew that was my story. I always knew I was American. I was born in Boston. And so to find out like about my father, him being undocumented, him being deported multiple times from the United States, was just learning about a part of myself that is relatable to an immigrant story in this country. Because Puerto Ricans are not immigrants. Puerto Ricans are U.S. American citizens. Mm-hmm. And when they come here, they're just traveling to another part of America. So when people are like calling us immigrants, they're like, they're not immigrants. They're not.
You know, but I think when you go into the dictionary, because I believe I looked this up once, the definition of immigrants is somebody that leaves your homeland to go somewhere else. So if you follow the dictionary, we are immigrants, because I'm leaving my patria to go to a place that to me is foreign, even though I have citizenship. You know, when I left Puerto Rico, I'm moving to live somewhere else. So,
but that's also something that's, you know, and it's interesting because we're developing a show right now that involves a Puerto Rican girl and a family, and anyways, but it's something that I touched on when I was writing this stuff up. And obviously I don't, you know, I learned more about Puerto Rico when I married my wife, but it's like, that is one of the tricky things about being Puerto Rican, I think, is that, yeah, you're an American citizen. You share a lot of things in common with the America, right? That when you're in Puerto Rico, but it really feels like you were in a completely different country. You can vote for the presidential primary. You can't vote for the president. You're mm-hmm. treated completely like you are from another country, yet you have all the rights to be in this country. Often, mm-hmm. you know, people that are from Puerto Rico, I'm talking like old Puerto Rican souls, like that grew up on the island that never left. Not somebody who grew up in the States, Puerto Rican, because that's different. That would be like an Italian that grew up in the States. Like, you don't know any different. You're American. But if you grew up in the heart of Puerto Rico and you never left until you were 20, 30 years old, I don't think you're treated necessarily or feel necessarily the same, because you don't know America.
I don't think you feel like you're,
especially if you never traveled,
citizen.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, it's tricky. Listen,
like, a lot of kids never leave Puerto Rico.
There's a lot of kids from the center of the island that have never been to the beach, even though they're a drive away. You know what I mean? It's really intense. Y déjame preguntarte, Aida, so from your mom's side, the parte de mamá, you were an only child, or you have siblings?
No, I have siblings. I have, you know, I have two brothers and one sister, and they are Puerto Rican and Cuban. So I'm in the middle of like the entire Spanish speaking Caribbean at home.
It's a Caribbean melting pot.
Yeah. And then we're dealing with all different types of politics. And so when I say immigrant, I don't mean about us migrating here for a different life. My grandmother did that, but I'm talking about in the legal terms when they are calling us immigrants.
Yes, for sure.
Because technically, by that definition, everybody is an immigrant, right? The people who's from Ireland who came here seeking religious,
100%.
Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So everybody is. But you know, my stepfather's Cuban. And so then I learned, I grew up hearing about this political conflict in Cuba and they're having asylum, which is very different than Dominicans who are undocumented and Puerto Ricans who are natural born citizens.
Crazy.
And it's just so daunting because they treat us all the same.
Yeah.
Pretty much. You know, it's so fascinating.
And over here, we're all Mexican.
Yeah. If it's a Latino, Latino in California, Mexican.
Can you do the Mexican accent? No, actually, it's not Mexican. I'm Puerto Rican. What the heck are you talking about? You know?
Oh, I know. In those castings, it's like the worst for me is like I go in because I am tall, right? And they're like, "Oh, you're tall. Can you do the Sofia Vergara?" Oh, and I'm like, "I actually can't. I'm like, she's Cuban. She can do the Sofia Vergara. Yeah,
exactly.
I can do the Aida Rodriguez.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. You know, it's so funny. God. Like, I think I have several people that say to me, you know, I they call me into going for this thing, and they say, can you do the Rosalind Sanchez accent? And I'm like, that's just so freaking funny because I have never been asked to do my accent. The contrary. Everybody wants me to get rid of my accent. I'm going, there's actually people asking to do a Rosalind Sanchez accent when people like make me feel like they hate it. You know, isn't that weird? I'm going, my whole life I've been like trying to avoid it. And now there's people asking for my accent. Stupid.
It's the word that they asked me to do an accent. And I have refused. And I know that some casting directors hate me because I've said pass on everything when they asked me to do they'll say, can she do a Latino accent? And I'm like, my accent or the dialect that I speak in is my version of what a Latino accent is because I was, you know, I was born here. I was raised in a home where they only spoke Spanish. They wouldn't allow us to speak English, but this is the best that I can get. So when I try to do that, it sounds fake.
It's forced. I mean,
you know, what's funny to me is I would never have guessed you were from Boston because I don't hear a sound of a Boston accent at all. I hear East Coast, but I don't hear a Boston accent. And I'm from LA. It's like a neutral accent. Like we don't have an accent. We have a surfer dude or like a valley. Like, you know what I mean? But we don't have, we're considered like a neutral or just like a blah. Like we don't have a sound versus like the South or the East Coast in different areas. Right. But like Boston to New York is a big difference.
Absolutely. Park the car and park.
Yeah. But have you ever had a Boston accent or can you do a Boston accent?
No, because I left there when I was a baby went back. I have family there. I lived in New York during my formative years.
Got it. Okay.
I grew up in Miami, and that's where I really grew up. Like, wow. And I go back and forth between here and New York, between New York and Miami. But I'm not a Bostonian culturally.
I was born
in Brigham Women's, which is a very well-known hospital there. But I went from Boston as a baby to the Dominican Republic.
Wow, it's amazing.
Y otra pregunta, you always knew as a little girl, were you the sibling that was funny? That was little bit of a no? Okay.
No, we were just making fun. I was with some friends who are also Latinos and we were talking about how people, you know, when we're talking about mental illness and issues and they'll say anxiety, you know, like people have anxiety. And I was like, when we were little, they would just call that nervioso. They'd be like, está nerviosa, right?
Está nerviosita, claro, claro.
Yeah, they'd be like, she's nervous, like that. She's a nervous kid. Like, brush it off, go outside and play. Stop being so weak. Yeah. Like we didn't have the luxury of claiming, anxiety or whatever. I grew up in the midst of chaos when I think about it.
So when did you, was it a conscious decision at some point in your life as a teenager in your 20s? When did you decide, you know what, I love this entertainment industry universe and I'm actually freaking funny?
So the thing is, my brother is Chino, David, is the funniest person in our family. Okay. He's the comedian and he's on all the time and he always has a joke. He's at my comedy special making jokes. Like he's he's Chinito, my baby brother. I wanted to be a comedian when I was little because my mom said I used to grab the broomstick and I used to always tell jokes and try to be funny. One of my tios, Davey, he introduced me to Richard Pryor when I was really young. And I wasn't supposed to be listening to that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I used to go, but he's the one that gave me Run DMC. He gave me Richard Pryor. He gave me, like, he was my youngest uncle that was like cool and hip. He taught me. I love Bruce Lee and Muhammad Ali. Those are like my heroes. And that comes from uncles. And so I wanted to do that. But my mom would always tell me, nobody's going to want to marry a girl that's walking around being goofy and funny. And I was like, Lucy got a husband. Yeah, yeah. Like, what are you talking about? He's the goofiest person on television. I love Lucy. Like, I love, love, love Lucy. I used to watch that like it was going out of style. But then it was, I moved to LA. I'm a writer. I've always written since I was a kid, a heavy prose writer. I got published when I was a child and I always wrote. And I wrote a script about a movie that I wanted to make about my life in the world of sports because my ex-husband played football in the NFL. And it made it to like the final cut of the Sundance Writers Lab thing. And I moved to California because I thought I was going to be, I was like, I'm going to make it. Uh-huh. And I moved to California and I got signed by an agency immediately as an actor. And then I started writing. I started making these independent films because I wanted to learn how to make a movie and I didn't have the money to go to film school. So I started gathering people's money and making these like low budget, straight to video films and they were recouping their money. So people started investing and giving me money to make other projects. And then I did a roast for my friend's birthday party. I mean, and Chris Spencer was there and Chris Spencer said, you are a stand-up comedian, Aida. Wow. He was like, He said, you can do the acting, you can do the writing, like all of that stuff is fine. But he's like, you should explore stand-up comedy. And he sent me to this open mic. And I started doing the open mics, but it was just like, I was just doing it as a hobby. It was very cathartic for me, like to just, because I've always talked about my life on stage. I've never shied away from that. And which a lot of comedians have to evolve to that. They don't start there, and some don't do it at all. And I just was like, oh, I'm going to always do this. I never want to stop.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So From a Roast is where you discovered through a friend that I actually have this ability, because being a stand-up comedian is not easy. It's so different than being an actor. And I mean, I say that like I know, but I just love comedy. I've always loved comedy. And I just think it's a whole different beast to stand up there and expose all your inner thoughts and just hang on everybody's expression and laugh at the end. And if it's good, the fire, I'm assuming, just burns and you just roll full steam ahead. And if it dips, you got to find a way quickly to shift in your brain. Like, I don't think people understand what goes on in a comedian's head every second on a stage.
Yeah, it's, you know, I like to say that I think stand-up comedians have a certain brilliance that to stand on the stage and share a thought and have, you know, hundreds of people that come from different walks of life, different thought patterns to laugh and meet at that one thought of yours is pretty powerful. Mm-hmm. And you're right, when it doesn't work, you know, somebody asked me today, how do you feel when you know you're about to bomb or when you start bombing and it feels like you get hot on the inside?
Yeah. Wow.
Start sweating because you're like, this is going bad. And you know, that is, I used to just panic. And then I would turn on the audience. As I became more seasoned as a comic, I now know how to, I laugh at it. It's just funny. I'm like, oh, y'all don't like me. Okay. But I used to get so, my feelings would get so hurt when the audience wasn't with me.
There's such an art to it, right? It's like I just recently watched the Chappelle stand up, the closer. I mean, a little while ago, actually, I watched it, and I love Chappelle. And he talks about his trans friend, how that person, you know, he was grooming that person to be a stand up and trying to help his friend learn the craft because they were really funny in a room, but then they got up on stage and just bombed.
Story.
And as soon as they got done bombing, they were in the audience and they were cracking the best jokes ever, making the whole place go nuts.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
The comedy part of it is an art. It's not just telling jokes. There's like a way in which you craft it in your brain, right? And script it, that the flow of it all makes the night.
I really want people to understand, yes, it is an art, right? Like, there's this creative part of comedy that is very, very, you know, interesting to watch develop, because you want people to laugh and you have to choose like what you're going to talk about, what a set is about. It's also a science. There's a very technical aspect of it in terms of, it's not just you going on stage and saying funny stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of people who are funny at work, they come up to me after my shows and they're like, oh yeah, my friends always tell me I should be a comedian. I'm like, just because you're the funny guy at Costco does not mean that you have the skills to be a stand-up comedian, because you're making people laugh who are in your surroundings, who probably think like you, are pretty much similar to the way you, because you're around these people. They belong to this. You have a cultural connection to these people. Stand-up comedians have to make people who don't have that with laugh. Mm-hmm. And it's not just about a joke requires, you know, a lot of thought. For someone like me, a lot goes into a joke because there are layers, because the laugh is one of the greatest things you can get. But the best thing for me is to make people think.
Yep.
So if I'm talking about something that's complicated and might be controversial, I have to figure out a way around that. And then I have to structure it in the format of a joke. I'm not just going on stage and saying, you know, white people are evil. Ha ha ha. Like, you know, there has to be something about, you have to sit down and think about, what is the premise? What am I trying to say here? What's the point of this? And then, okay, so here, this is the premise. What's the punchline? What do I want people to laugh at about this? because it's just, it's a lot. And especially right now, it's so complicated.
For sure.
Have you ever been part of this situation? Because, you know, you have, of course, you prepare, you have your script, you know, you have your jokes, you have everything all lined up. Like you said, it's a science. Has it ever happened to you that you're on stage, you feel that things are going sideways for whatever reason, people are not reacting the way you were expecting? Do you continue that script and try to put some frosty and try to get out of the hole? Or have you ever been through a situation that you just have to pivot 100% and just start talking about something that was not planned, written, or organized?
That's a good question. I actually have done both. So it depends on who the audience is. You know, I don't code switch. So that's one thing. Some comedians will pivot for whatever audience they're in. So if they have a whole white audience and they change the language to make the white people feel comfortable, then when they get around Latinos, Latinx, Latine people, then they adjust for that. And then I don't do that. It doesn't work for me, because part of me doing what I do in stand-up comedy is just being true to my authentic self. And I can't be authentic if I feel like you're uncomfortable. Now I got to pretend and say something that is going to make you comfortable while I have to step outside of myself. It doesn't work for me, because if you see me again, you're going to either think I was being disingenuous. It just doesn't work for me. So, but I've had to, you know, I'm doing television tapings where the set isn't going well, and you're not supposed to do that, but I have. And I've been like, I have to get a laugh here, because this is a television show and I can't sink the ship, because they're not feeling these jokes.
To me, some of the funniest comedians, that's the way it should be. I mean, Chappelle, Eddie Murphy, I mean, if you go like Bill Burr, you go to these people that, to me, like, make me laugh. They don't shift. They just say, Ricky Gervais, they just say what is ever on their mind that they've scripted and prepared, and you roll with it. That, like, the woke people, you know, that whole thing. I mean, there's a good side to being, you know, the woke America. There are values to it. But at the end of the day, for comedy, it hurts, I think, the beauty of what comedy is, which is, like, if you can't laugh at yourself, if you can't laugh at the issues, if you can't laugh at your problems, you're never going to improve on them. And people need to just, that's what great comedians do. I think they make you think and laugh about things that are uncomfortable.
Yeah, no, this is the reason why I did that documentary too. That was another reason why, was to humanize myself as a comedian, because I think that people have like higher expectations of stand-up comedians than they do even politicians. Like, if you think of like all of the stuff that Donald Trump got away with saying out loud and still became president after that, because, you know, the grab him by the stuff was before he became the president of the United States, and then still went on to become the leader of the free world. Whereas someone who's a comedian that's problematic and makes people uncomfortable will lose their job, lose, you know what I'm saying? So I really want people to understand that, yes, I think words matter. And I think it's important to be responsible with what you're saying. You can't go in a theater and yell out fire. And I think that it's not cool to punch down. That's low hanging fruit. But I also want people to know, like, I'm the girl who's went to visit my father this year, who grew up without my father, not knowing that I was part Dominican, in the midst of dysfunction. Why do you have such high expectations for me? Why do you think my EQ is so high that I'm going to go on stage and be, I'm a stand-up comedian. Most of us are wacky. We go on stage by ourselves in hopes that people laugh at us and validate us. Why do you have such high expectations of me, more so than you do the superintendent of your kid's school? Totally. Like, that's, we got to put things back into perspective.
Mm-hmm. Does it always come from pain, Aida? The writing?
No. Sometimes it comes from like silliness. Like, it's funny who responds to what jokes. In this special, the Fighting Words special, I have a joke about traffic, and I talk about the way people drive according to their emotional issues. I just thought that it was a fun observation from me. And I was just like, I think everybody can relate to being frustrated in traffic.
Yeah.
And maybe this will, if you're in traffic, I've been seeing so many people get hurt out because of road rage. I was like, maybe if somebody hears this joke and it's ingrained in their subconscious mind, next time they're in a situation, instead of fighting, they could just laugh.
Yeah, they react different. That's valuable. You have two kids. How old are they? They're like in their 20s now?
Yeah, 25, and my son is 29.
29? Yeah. Oh, my
either,
God.
Either following the path of entertainment or no?
Both. Yeah, my daughter's a writer. She's actually in a in the writer's room of a pretty good show.
Nice.
And then my son is a director, also a writer. They're both very creative. And it's so funny because when they were younger, I never thought in a million years that either of them would end up. They're both very scientific, very good in math. Everything that I wasn't, like, I'm very right-brained. My kids are both. My kids are creative and they know the quadratic formula. I was like, wow. These kids are geniuses.
That's awesome.
That's great.
Proud mama right there. You know what I mean? When you're able to deliver to brilliant kids like that, it's amazing. Y ellos, for the most part, because you know, Aida is super transparent and she will say whatever she's thinking, you know, and I think mm-hmm. you're freaking amazing. I'm so overwhelmed just interviewing you. Ever go, Mom, don't go there? Or Mom, what the heck are you doing?
That's a great question. Yeah, do your kids ever be like, Mom, you know, you're embarrassing me with that joke?
Or do they always understand where you're coming from and love it?
I don't do any jokes on stage about anyone in my family without their permission, without their consent.
Even if it's not about the family, but something that might make them uncomfortable in society, do you still push it? Like, because it's your life and you're telling your story?
Well, that's why I don't talk about sex on stage. And it's not to shame other women for doing it, but I don't talk about my sex life and I don't talk about those things because I do think about my kids. And
wow,
that's great.
You know, my kids went to Campbell. My son went to Campbell Hall. And when my son was at Campbell Hall, I was in my early 30s, right? I was in school. Friends' parents were in their 50s, some in the 40s in their 50s. And so I always felt like I had to behave in a certain way, even though I don't know if it comes from an unhealthy place. I never wanted to be anything that made my son feel uncomfortable because he already was dealing with his teammates because he was an athlete saying, wow, your mom is hot. And other parents feeling weird about me because I was younger. Mm-hmm. And so I took that with me on stage. And so while other women have the liberty of talking about, you know, things that are of sexual nature and all that stuff, I just never wanted my kids to be uncomfortable because teenage boys were like a big demographic of people who watch comedy. And I just didn't want my son to feel uncomfortable. I never wanted to give anybody the ammo that mm-hmm. would, you know, because like I say, kids are cruel. And they didn't choose to be in this business at that age. So I always tried to be as respectful to them because they do matter to me. And so I was like, nah. But so they really won't say anything is off limits. And when I make jokes about them, I always clear it with them. And they signed off on every joke that I've ever done.
Oh, that's great.
That's beautiful. Were you a single mom, Aida, or daddy was present?
No, I was a single mom. I got divorced. I moved to California with my kids and their father is, he lives on the East Coast. And not the same type of situation with me and my father because I've never taken my kids away from their dad. I've always insisted on them to have a relationship. I also insisted on them to seek healing. He wasn't there for many years when they were younger. And they both have their feelings about it, but I was the one that rallied them and said, listen, you can be together more longer than you weren't. And this is for you. Healing is always for you. Forgiveness is always for you. And you're going to want to have a relationship because when somebody goes, you live in regret. And I just never wanted that for them. So I have been a single mother for a long time, but I'm very happy to say that their father is really working hard and trying to get back into a healthy relationship with his kids.
That's great.
That's great. That's great. Fighting Words, it's incredible, guys. I had the opportunity and the blessing to see it, and I can watch it 15 times and enjoy it like it was the first. Thank you for opening your heart and doing an incredible job. You're such an inspiration for all of us, man, lady, beautiful lady.
You're an inspiration for us, too. Aww. I watch. Let me tell you how heavy it is to be a stand-up comedian. I was texting her because I watch Fantasy Island.
Yeah.
My uncle that was murdered, my uncle who raised me like my father was killed in a hate crime, and he was everything to me. And Fantasy Island is that he gave me like television. Like I will watch Love Boat with him. Like my other uncle was like the hip hop, but I will watch Love Boat, Fantasy Island. He showed me sitcoms. But Fantasy Island was a show that we would watch. And I remember being a little bit older when I was watching it with him. And it was just this escape from reality that I needed. And so in the last couple of months, you know, because I was on the road, I stay at home when I'm not on the road because I am afraid of COVID. I just started watching it one day because I like to support my people. Sometimes it's hard to watch shows with people who you like because their shows are trash. And you're like, I'm going to watch this bull because I said I was going to watch it.
Oh, no.
But I was watching Fantasy Island and I just thought that it was, I like the take. Like I was like, they didn't try to recreate this whole thing. They let it be its own thing. And it was just so fun to watch. I love the episode when you were on there because I was like, I could relate to that going back. So a part of my therapy is going back to when I was younger and doing that healing.
Are you talking about my episode?
Yeah, it was very, you know, very meaningful in my life. Like, you never know, like, how you're affecting people with your art, but that show just gave me joy in these last 6 months. And I didn't even want to binge it because I needed, like, you know, like you got a little piece of cake and you're like, I'm going to eat a piece every day.
Yeah. So yes.
I can have some sweets. I just sat there and watched it. And I texted you and I was like, this show has to come back because it's like, everything is so much trauma on TV.
Yeah.
That it just feels good to go. And you went back, like, you know, it was just great. Like when you went to Cuba and it was just like so fun to watch. And I was very happy about that.
Thank you. It meant so much to me. I was so pleasantly surprised. I was like, oh my God, I want to cry. Aida texted me. She likes Fantasy Island.
Oh, yeah. That was our show. That was my Uncle Raymond's show. It was just
nice. And then what's besides Fighting Words, which is going to be huge for your career. I just know it. You're developing your own TV show, right? You're going to write a producer, star, do the whole thing.
Yeah, I wrote it. We wrote the script. We just, we turned it in. We'll see what happens. I have an animated series that I'm working on with ITV Studios, which you will get phone calls for, which I'm very excited. Cause it's like my South Park.
I love it.
You know, but I'm gonna make sure that Latinos, Latinx people also get picked on because we're not exempt from it.
Claro.
And I'm working on that, so we'll see.
Nice,
it's awesome.
You know, in Hollywood, nothing is
you gotta work on it all. You gotta keep working.
I don't believe it until I see it out. Until I sign. You know what I mean? They can tell you whatever, but you know, it's a hustle. It's a constant. I keep telling Eric, it's funny because before we started, we brought you in to start the interview. We do a little bit of a reef of hot topics and things like that. And he opened the show talking about, he was talking to this director that is a TV episode director that for 20 years he's been traveling the world and he barely sees his kids and his wife. And he was asking me, are you comfortable doing that? You know, just not being present and just traveling because you want to direct, because I think my future, my north at some point is be behind the camera and this whole thing. And I was telling him, listen, I think I'm a great mom and I'm a great wife. But I'm 48 years old and I've been blessed, Aida, a esta etapa de mi vida, with a lot of work, you know? And I said, I want to ride this way for a little longer because I don't know how long it's going to last, you know? Is that because I've been working so hard for so many years and I'm lucky that I'm still wanted and needed. That's not to say, because he freaked out. He said, what do you mean? Like your family is not important? I go, of course it is. But I'm just saying all this because people like you and me, women of color, you know what I mean? Like that we, it's a fight every day. It's like, let me just swim because I don't want to freaking drown, you know, type of thing. So we just have to.
Sometimes it's just luck of the draw. I mean, I'm fortunate enough to be working on a show in Los Angeles. So that's the dilemma, right? It's like, I work here and I can't travel. I'm, you know.
And I would love
eight months of filming gone for.
I'm gone. I would love to every work that I do to be in Los Angeles. I don't have the clout at this moment in my life to be like, I'm not working if it's not in LA. You know what I mean? Like I can tell Fantasy Island people, we're going to shoot this at Warner Brothers. It doesn't work like that. You know what I mean? You know, so.
You're on a procedural show, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I do a show called The Rookie on ABC, which is like.
I've seen it.
It's like a creator of Grey's, or not creator, but from Mark Gordon, who did Grey's Anatomy. So it's a very character-driven procedural, like a Grey's Anatomy, less soapy, more humor, and just levity in the show. So it's what's funny, a small little thing, is our show shoots on the original sound stages that the original Fantasy Island shot on.
Oh,
isn't
that crazy?
So, no idea, 4 years in, and our primary stage was the primary Fantasy Island set. 95% of the original Fantasy Island was all shot at Warner Brothers.
The juju. Listen,
isn't that crazy?
The tattoo was, that was like, oh man, that came full circle for me. Yeah. it's funny. I think you will always work. You guys are both talented actors that are really actors, and you will always work because you're not here because you're the flavor of the month. Like, no. The cream always rises to the top. Mm. And I just think that people who take the craft seriously and respect it, even as people who know me as a stand-up comedian, I've always been an actor. I was an actor. I wrote my first stage play when I was like 13 years old. I wrote it and I starred in it. And I know, I feel like that the stage is always the true actor's medium. So for me, it's very, very serious. Like, even now, as I prepare for my own TV show, I'm in acting class. I have a coach. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't take it. I think it's so important to take the craft seriously, mm-hmm. if you're going to do it. Because, you know, the flavor of the months, they come along. But how many have you seen so far? Come and go. Come and go.
Exactly. Come and go. Longevity is important, man. We're doing all right. Thank you, Aida. You're amazing. Yeah,
thank you so much for sharing your life, your journey, your comedy, all of it.
I'll be watching. I'm going to watch both of y'all.
Yeah.
We're watching you.
Okay, mama. Un besito. Cuídate. Bendiciones.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Que Dios te bendiga.
Gracias, mami. How awesome
she's great. I can't believe I've never met her with you all these years.
She's really, really, really good friends with Lisa Vidal, with Jolene Rodriguez, two women that I love so much. Oh my God, I'm so happy. I've been telling you for a long time, we should have Aida. You have to see that comedy special.
Yeah, Fighting Words, for sure, on HBO Max.
It's out now. I'm telling you, it is incredible. Okay, gracias, Aida, mami. Thank you. Do you want to go back to Hot Topics fast?
We can save our topics for next time.
No, let's do this one. Because this one came out and it's relevant. What about, because we went through it. The IVF, the two families, two couples that did IVF here in Southern California, and they implanted the wrong embryos. And 3 months, I think, a week or 3 months down the road, they realize this is not my kid. I carried this child
two different families that they were raising. The first family I read, they knew something was off right away
because the kid came out with
dark skin,
yeah.
and black hair,
yeah.
And they're both very, you know, I guess light skinned individuals,
and
white,
have a
white
kid
people.
That is also very fair.
And the sister was like, wow, this doesn't look like any of us. And then they got her, you know, tested. DNA tested and it came out not their child.
Can you imagine that moment? And can you imagine that phone call to the clinic saying, oh my God, this is not my kid. Where is my child? Because you know your child is somewhere. I mean, you're hoping that they implanted your embryo to somebody else's body.
The good
body.
News is that their embryo actually got implanted somewhere else, because if they had just screwed up and, you know, put two of the same family's embryos into one in the wrong person, then they would never have had a child all this time. So at least both families were able to get $100 million. Yeah, hell yeah, you sue.
Really?
But not even a question. You sue the crap out of them. That's a horrific mistake that you pay these doctors. First of all, IVF is not cheap, not covered by insurance. These doctors are making a lot of money. You have a huge responsibility. You're dealing with life. Huge responsibility to be on point with everything. Yeah, mistakes happen. But nah, you're not with shit like that.
Would you have kept the child that you carry?
You can't. First of all, the only way you keep the child that you carry is if the you never found out and it was an embryo that had been sitting there and like there's the other parents didn't want the child, whatever. But these are two families that both wanted children. Both embryos just got swapped, you know, switched at birth.
I can't even imagine. That's insane. That you carry this child and then for two, three months, you're breastfeeding this child. It's your baby, but then you feel odd because it looks nothing like you. So I'm assuming that she always had it was energetic. You know, she always had a little bit of a thing going, something is not adding up. And then to go ahead, confirm that your hunch was correct and then having to give that child away because there's still a connection there.
100%. It's harder on them than it is on the child. The child, I think, is not going to remember anything. But it's much harder on the families.
Regardless of suing and all the stuff, the legal nightmare that they're about to embark, you know, I think at some point, once the storm is over, you know, they're going to have to find the hidden blessing in all this. Listen, she carried a baby. It's not the baby's fault. You know what I mean? So she was able to give love and life to a little creature that it was more than this, so deserving of having a beautiful moment inside.
What I would hope that happens is that both people sue, get a bunch of money. They end up laughing at this at some point down the road. They reunite as two families and they understand, wow, this was a curse that turned into a blessing, and that both kids, as they grow older, end up understanding the story. Like, oh my God, can you imagine? They actually delivered you. They actually raised you for the first 3 months.
I think the kids need to know.
Be a great thing that, you know, you go, wow, this is the person who actually brought you into this world. And they raised you for the first 3 months of your life. This was a huge screw up and everybody's happy and healthy. We both are raising our families now, but I think that would be a cool connection because the parents also want, you know, are going to probably wonder about baby so-and-so for the first 3 months, whatever happened to that child.
So I hope that
they keep in touch at some point. I only bring up the suing point because then they can all go out and do like a great family vacation together with that money they got.
I think at this point it's about emotional health.
No, it's terrible, but.
Because they need to heal and they need to understand it happened, but I need to move on. Now I have my child.
There's a happy ending, in my opinion. Three months, it would have been way worse if it was 8 years.
Yes, I agree. So. Anyways, this was beautiful. Thank you, Aida. Thank you for the hot topics.
Yeah, we'll keep you posted on if family. She's going to be doing that project.
I love my kids. I love my husband. I don't want to travel so much. I don't want to be away. I don't want people thinking that work is more important than seeing my kids grow. Because I'm just doing a mama gallina. My kids and my family... You guys are everything. I don't want people to get this twisted.
Well, she just said she's taking off to leave me again. So let's see.
Oh, my goodness.
No, yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you for the kind words. Love you.
I love you.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to write us a review and tell us what you think.
If you want to follow us on Instagram, check us out at @HeSaidElladijo or send us an email, ericandross@iheartradio.com. He Said Ella Dijo is part of iHeartRadio's My Cultura podcast network.
See you next time.
Bye.